The search for the perfect Christmas tree can be one of the most magical moments of the holiday season. Today, Christmas trees and other holiday plants. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. This hour, we'll talk about Christmas trees, how to pick a good one and care for it once you've taken it home. We'll find out how to keep your poinsettia on point through the holidays and how to coax blooms out of your holiday cactus. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh will be here along with Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. Mark and Richard will also answer your questions. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we're going to start off the hour talking about holiday plants, poinsettia, holiday cactus, and of course, the biggest holiday plant of all, your Christmas tree. DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh is here. Hello, Mark.
Good morning.
And Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron is also here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And we're going to start with Christmas trees. So, Mark, that's your arena. And I've put up a link on Facebook so people can follow and find the Iowa Christmas Tree Farms. If you want that Christmas tree farm experience, though, you've got to get out there pretty quick, right?
Yes. Numbers are limited. I work with a number of growers in my district, and I actually help a local farm myself. And last year we were just open on weekends. We were open 5 days, and we ran out of trees. There's a grower near Palo that I work with, and today is his last day. And he produces a lot of Christmas trees, but there's a lot of people coming to the door. And we talked about this, and there's a couple things going on. One thing that's happening in Iowa is the number of growers. I was looking back in the literature, and 5 or 6 years ago, they talked about 200 different growers, maybe what we call choose-and-cut farms in Iowa. And I was talking to Dr. Jesse Randall this morning. He actually got a hold of him on the phone, and that number's probably below 100 now.
Wow.
And
so that's been a huge
decline. Yeah, there's been a huge decline probably over the last 10 to 15 years. You know, folks are retiring. No one picks it up. I was talking, he knows of two growers that this is their last year. And at the annual Christmas Tree Growers Association this spring, he said there was 5 new growers. But I know one of those growers is taking over an older farm. But I also know of 2 or 3 growers in the last 15 years I've been here that have shut the door for whatever reason. And so in the last 17 years, I've seen 1 new farm in my district, and I found it the other day just driving down a dirt road. I saw a sign for Christmas trees, and it looks like they've maybe been selling them for 1 or 2 years, but they're probably only producing 20 to 40 a year. It's a really small acreage. It's a vineyard and stuff, but they've got some Christmas trees. So the other thing that happened besides that is in 2012, we talked about the drought, and mm-hmm. we talked about the impacts that that was going to have. If you look at the reports nationally, they're blaming some of the national shortages on the recession. In about 08, growers were starting to not, you know, they were seeing that economically things weren't going well, so they weren't planting as many trees and stuff like that. And basically, you got to remember that Christmas trees, an average Christmas tree takes 7 years, and the range is probably 4 to 15 years. So it takes a long time. So if you kind of go backwards, that kind of makes sense with the recession. But in Iowa, I was talking to Jesse this morning, a lot of those growers lost 80 to 90% of the trees that they planted in 2012 because of the drought. But talking to him, he said there was a number of growers he worked with that were also at that time in 2012 with the drought, and it kind of got dry in 2013. They were losing some 3 to 4 footers, which would have been ready right now.
The ones that would have been ready this year.
So, you know, a number of growers, And the other thing is, because some of the growers, like in the Cedar Rapids, Iowa City area, I know a couple growers have closed down over the last couple years. So that has put more pressure on other local growers. So they normally maybe sold 1,000 and now, you know, they've got 1,500 people coming in the door. So all that has kind of added up. And some of them are looking to expand, but that won't come into play for 7 to 8 more years. So
do you find that most of the growers you know, is this something that is a sideline for them, or is this something you can actually make a living doing?
I know a few that use that income year-round, but I know most of them probably in Iowa would kind of fall in the hobby, you know, get the kids through college, being able to, you know, improve the farm a little bit here and there. It's a lot of work. And to really, you know, to make a living at it, you'd have to sell a couple thousand trees a year to really get your numbers up and to sell wreaths and all that kind of stuff. And to get to that kind of production, that's a huge operation. And with Christmas trees, again, if you're starting from scratch, you're looking at probably 7 years before you even get into production, but you're looking at planting, you're looking at mowing, you're looking at weed control, you're looking at insect and disease control. And then once those trees start to, the tips or the tops start to grow a foot or so a year, then you're looking at shearing annually. There's a lot of work. And then for some species, you might have to do some coloring to give them a little more green color, depending on species and stuff like that. So it's a ton of work. And, you know, it's just like new farmers coming on and stuff like that. It's people are busy and people look at investments. But, yeah, you could potentially, but I would say most tend to be more on the hobby side. But they work. They do a great job. A lot of these farms have other things, you know, bunnies to pet or, you know, the thing I see working at a farm is people just love to be able to open the door and say, kids, there's a field, go run, go, yeah. You know, and you can hear the kids screaming and yelling and just the opportunity for people to get outdoors. We always talk about getting kids outdoors. Christmas trees is a great way to get, you know, our pumpkins and stuff like that. And a number of these growers may even have apples or they have, you know, so a lot of this stuff on the full-timers, they may do multiple things to kind of keep that going year-round.
Well, and it sounds also like maybe an opportunity. If this is a hobby farm that you'd like to get into, if people are getting out of the business, this could be a great opportunity for a new generation.
Talking to Jesse this morning, he said there's a number of growers he knows that would like to keep it going. And I talked to another grower. So they are looking to potentially, you know, find somebody that they could even mentor, pass it along to. Even talked to a gentleman the other day who actually has it in his will to, he's working with some younger people that he knows to start mentoring them now and helping them plant, that once he passes, that he's actually going to potentially donate it to a land trust. But part of that land trust was to keep it, part of the agreement will be to keep it a working tree farm, a Christmas tree farm. So he's trying to do his best to set it up so he can keep it going. And he's already trying to cultivate some youth, even some of the kids that have worked for him for 10 years, you know, through their high school years, have shown interest. So he's working to do that. So, yeah, there are some opportunities out there.
All right, and you can find out about farms in your area at iowachristmastrees.com. Of course, there will also be many other opportunities to buy Christmas trees at Christmas tree lots, at landscaping places, at nurseries. They're all over the place this time of year. But there has been a concern about a shortage of trees, period, this year, right?
I've seen some stuff nationally and in national media and stuff that they've talked about that there's been some shortages. And Dr. Randall told me a story today. He talked to a big wholesaler that last year he was getting $25 a tree for Christmas tree as wholesale. But that was if he cut it, he wrapped it, and he shipped it to the growers that were buying or to the people that were buying it. This year he's getting $30 a tree. And they're sending their own crews to cut, wrap, and ship it. So he's not paying any of those costs. So there is, the demand is increasing. And people, the other thing that I see in this business is people, new families. It's amazing how many new families I see. The first thing when folks come in the door where I work, I ask them, have you been here before? And I would say last weekend, I had 20 people, and most of them had young children, say, we're trying to start a new tradition in our family. We're looking at traditions. And so people are continuing to look at that as an opportunity, as a family tradition. I've worked there long enough that I've seen kids that were at my knee level that are now in college. So it tells you how long I've been around. But it's neat to see those faces and people do those traditions. It's really neat.
Well, give us just the basics again. We talk about it every year, but when you do pick out that Christmas tree, now if it's a fresh cut or a cut your own, you can take it right home and stick it in water. But if it's not, what do you need to do?
Well, even if a fresh cut, if you get it that day, usually if you get it up within 3 to 6 hours after that fresh cut, you just get it up, stick it in water. If you have one that you fresh cut and you're not going to be able to get it up right away, maybe a day or two, just get it home in a cool place and stick it in a bucket of water so that moisture starts to go up and stuff. Or put it in a cool place, and then if you have a saw, do another fresh cut just like a half inch right before you put it up. If you're buying, there's a lot of great groups do fundraisers with Christmas trees like Iowa City Optimists and groups like that. So they're bringing trees in. A lot of groups I work with, because a lot of the local growers will supplement what they have by bringing stuff right in too. So what we always encourage folks is when you're looking at those trees, basically run your hand from the inside out. And if you get some needles on the very inside, that's pretty normal. Most Christmas trees will lose those inner needles. But if you get out towards the end and you start to pull a lot of needles, that's probably not a very fresh Christmas tree. So I might tend to, or if you see that the bark looks odd or the needles are fading, the color's not there, then they're, but Christmas trees are resilient. A lot of these things get cut a couple weeks or more before they come in. And they sit in the lots. The one concern I have this year is we've had such warm weather, so a lot of these have been kind of sitting out. But basically, a lot of these places will fresh cut it for you before you leave the property. If you get a pre-cut, but if you don't, make sure when you get home, you take about a half inch off, and then you get it in water right away, even if you're not going to put it up. And then keep it away from heat sources. I think that's the biggest thing.
And it's going to drink a lot, right?
It's
going to
drink
a
lot of water right off the bat. And what I always tell people is if you put it up on, Sunday afternoon, I would say Sunday night before you go to bed, check that water. And they tend to say that you should have a basin that should have about a quart amount of water for every inch diameter. So keep that going and check it every morning, because in the first couple days, it's going to drink.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back. We'll talk more about other holiday plants, and we'll also take your questions at 866-780-9100 with me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh, and Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We're talking about holiday plants. And, of course, we will also take your questions about the plants and trees in your life. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've been talking a lot about live Christmas trees. I'm also curious about Christmas tree alternatives that you may have turned to. You can share those with us. 866-780-9100 is the number. With me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. And Richard, we've focused on the big plant, the Christmas tree, so far, but let's talk about some of the other holiday plants that people love to bring into their offices or their homes this time of year. Of course, poinsettias are a perennial favorite.
Correct.
When you pick one out at the store, how do you pick a good one?
A plant that has good color, whether it's red, white, pink, or whatever, but nice color, nice dark green leaves, well-shaped, healthy, basically. If you see something where the leaves might be curling up or they might be turning yellow, they may not have a very long life in the home. So a nice, healthy-looking plant.
All right. Should you feel the soil, see how dry it is?
No, you shouldn't have to worry about that. But once you get it home, put it in bright light. Keep it away from any heat source or cold drafts. And then check it every day and use your finger. And if the soil surface is moist, it's fine. When it becomes dry, water promptly, and you'll be fine.
Now, we haven't had to worry very much about this because it's been so warm
lately.
But if you pick one out at the store and it's cold out, is that a concern about getting it home?
It is. So if you do it this weekend, you should be fine. It's supposed to be in the 40s and 50s. But next week, 20s and 30s. So next week, if you buy one, make sure the car is warm. And then when you buy it, have the person put it in a sleeve or some protective device. Because if you expose it to freezing temperatures, that may cause the leaves to fall off and look pretty bad. So make sure it has a nice warm location.
All right. And how long should it last?
If it gets good care, basically through December, January, into early February, it should.
All right. And then when that time is over, I know a lot of people like to keep them going or feel incredibly guilty about letting it go. Your advice is to let it go at that point.
Compost it would be good.
Okay.
But if you want a challenge, you can get it to bloom again next year, but it's pretty challenging. Basically, you would treat it just like a houseplant as far as watering it again, checking it every so often. And then basically you'd bring it outside toward the end of May. And you'd have to put it in a shady location initially and then gradually expose that plant to some direct sun. And after about a week or 10 days, it's been hardened off. And then I would leave it in the pot. I dig a hole and set the pot in the ground, okay, and leave it outside all summer long. I'll keep on watering it during dry periods, maybe give it a little bit of fertilizer, and then you'd bring it in sometime in September. And then the hard part comes in October because the poinsettia is a short-tailed plant, and so the plant basically needs complete darkness beginning in early October from 5 p.m. until 8 a.m. each day. And you need to do this for 8 straight weeks, every single day. And so what you can do, you can put it in the closet in the late afternoon, take it out in the morning, or maybe cover it with a box where it is. But you have to do that for basically 8 straight weeks beginning in early October. So it is challenging.
I think it's like having a pet, although without the affection.
And so when you think about that and you think of the cost, it's like, I'll compost it.
Right. And if you do decide to keep it, do you have to repot it?
You don't have to. You can if you wish, but you may want to pinch it back once or twice, too. You could do that in the early spring, early summer. But it actually does become a tree in milder climates, like in Southern California, Florida. It becomes basically a small tree.
All right, so it could get really big.
It could.
All right, we're going to talk about some of the other holiday plants, but I also want to get to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Chris is on the line in Moline with a Christmas tree problem. Hello, Chris.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, so we went out Sunday and cut our own tree and got it home right away, got it set up, put the lights on it and the ornaments and everything, and a week has gone by almost, and I was listening to your program and realized I never watered it once. I never put any water in it. And I'm wondering if there's a way to fix that problem without taking all the lights down and recutting it.
There really isn't, Chris. What you could try to do is you could try to water it. If you try to water it and just see over a 24-hour period if it really starts to take it. If it doesn't, you're probably better off to take it down and give it a fresh cut so it can really start to absorb that water.
Okay. What if I drill holes in it from it, up above?
Actually, that's something that people often think about, but you got to remember the water uptake vessels, basically the structures, are just underneath the bark. So even drilling just a little bit, you're not going to get to where that vascular system is. You're going to go too deep. So the vascular system is just that outer rim underneath what we call the cambium layer. So it's very shallow. So even drilling just even shallow and trying that, you're not going to, the best way is from the bottom up.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your help.
Yep. Sorry sure. to be the bearers of bad news. I'm sure that's a question you get a lot, Mark.
I do get that once in a while.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I want to talk about holiday cacti. That's something that a lot of us enjoy this time of year. And these are plants that can live a really long time.
Yes, they can.
So you could have something that's been around, I mean, what?
40, 50, wow. 60 years old. Absolutely.
Can be a real family heirloom. Yes. How do you coax holiday cacti to bloom the time of year when you want them to bloom?
It's kind of hard, but they're also short day plants. So just like the poinsettia, they can tell time as far as day length. And what they, again, need is they need short days beginning in early September. And so ideally, you put them in a room where you don't use the lights at night. And so the natural day length, as it gets shorter and shorter, that triggers flowering. So you don't really have to do anything. But if you have it in a room and you use that room at night and you have lights on, the plants will actually not bloom. So that's critical. Beyond that, the care is very simple. You basically water the plants when the soil surface becomes dry to the touch. You fertilize a little bit in the spring and summer. But the main thing is they need those short days in order to bloom.
So if I have it in a spare bedroom or something like that in the window, that'll work great. Mm-hmm. When it does start blooming, can I bring it out into the living room?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And once, that won't shorten the bloom segment? Or?
It should not. If you do that when the buds are real tiny, when they're just beginning to form, that change in the environment may stress the plant and they may fall off. But if they're actually beginning to bloom, they've developed to the point where they're going to stay. So that's no problem.
All right. So when I see them in the store this time of year, again, I mean, you could be buying something that you'll pass on to your children and your grandchildren. So how do you pick out a good one?
Just pick one that has a lot of flower buds on it, well-shaped, appears to be healthy, and should be fine. And they're also very, very easy to propagate, very easy. All you have to do basically to propagate this plant is to, you just pinch off some of those segments, let's say a 3 to 5 segment section of the plant. You just pinch it off or cut it off, and you just stick it into perlite, keep the perlite moist, and that will root typically within 5, 6, 7 weeks, and you have a new plant.
All right, and it is a cactus, so what about moisture?
Basically, let the soil dry out basically to the touch. If you do that, you're fine. The biggest problem is basically when you keep it too wet. If you keep it constantly wet, that's not what they like. These are actually epiphytes. They live in the crotches of trees, and they basically live in the plant debris that accumulates in these crotches. So it's basically leaves and stuff like that. So it's a very well-drained material. And if you repot a Christmas cactus, I typically use a commercial potting soil, but I add a little bit more perlite to it to make sure it has good drainage. That's critical.
All right, let's get back to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Jess is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jess.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay. My question is, I have received a housewarming plant, and the person who gave it to me called it Tongue of Mother-in-Law. But I want to know what the actual scientific name of this plant is and how to tend it.
It sounds like Sansevieria is the actual species name or genus name. Sansevieria, mother's-in-law tongue. It's these basically long leaves that come out of the ground or potting soil, typically green, but there are some varieties that have maybe a creamy white edge to it as far as the actual foliage. Extremely easy to grow. Basically, just bright light. They can take some direct sun. Basically, water them when the soil surface becomes dry to the touch. Fertilize maybe a little bit in the spring and summer. That's basically it. Very easy to grow.
All right. And again, this is a desert plant, right?
Yeah. It's a type of succulent. Right.
All right. So don't overwater.
Right. Don't overwater. That's the worst thing that succulents, they just hate that, is overwatering.
Your mother-in-law would not appreciate
yes,
that.
Yes, she wouldn't.
Sansevieria is a very nice name. All right. Jess, thanks a lot for your call. Brian is on the line next in Robbins. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, it's not related to Christmas trees. It's related to fruit trees, and I wondered if it was too early to throw my hat through my apple trees.
Yeah, I would not prune them at this point. I'd wait till at least March. That'd be the better time.
All right, you have to fill us in. What does that mean, throw your hat through your apple tree?
Well, with apple trees, you have to have a certain amount of pruning. Apples tend to be very, very dense as far as the canopy. And if it's very dense, you can't get very good sunlight into the tree. And so they have this saying that when you're pruning your tree, when you're done, you should be able to throw your hat through the canopy of the tree. That's an exaggeration, but that's the common theory.
Is there any guidance as to type of hat?
I don't think so.
I had one other question about a Japanese flowering crab apple.
All right.
It's kind of leaning, and I wonder if I need to prop it up or to put a cable on it and pull it straight up, or should I just leave it be?
How long has it been in the ground?
Oh, at least 19 years.
Well, I think it's going to be very hard to bring it back, if that's the case, that it's been there so long. The root system is pretty well established, and I think it's going to be very, very hard to pull it back and keep it at that location. I'd be inclined just to leave it where it is.
And you'll probably cause more damage, Brian, trying to pick it up or bring it back, especially if it developed that way. Now, if you take it and you can move that, if you take the trunk and you can move it, then to me there's some other issues there that you have to look at. It, for whatever reason, maybe there was a hard pan and the root system just didn't develop, but even with that, you're going to cause more damage. If it's very stable, you know, just let it go. But if it's loose, I would start looking at how long is that tree going to survive, because it means that the root system maybe didn't develop very well for one reason or not, too.
Is it too early to trim that tree, too?
I'd wait myself again March, early April.
But I would not use the hat method on a crab apple, because with those, they will tend to – Jerry's laughing. They will tend to oversprout. You know, with crab apples, you have to be very careful not to over-prune them, because if you really open up that crown with those, you'll get a lot of sucker sprouts, and that's really not what you want to do. With those, I would focus on rubbing and crossing branches that are maybe going down, or if you need to lift just a little bit. But I would really work to try to keep the density of that crown, because, again, with apples, you're looking, you need that light penetration for production and for good flower production. With crab apples, you don't want to introduce those sprouts.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Brian. And here's another Brian, this one in Grimes. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have a Japanese maple, I think is what they're called. I think the variety is called Autumn Blaze. It received storm damage a couple years ago, so like half the tree died, but now it's regrowing around it. Am I good just to let it keep growing and enjoy it as it is, or with that damage, is it good just to remove it and try and get a different tree?
I'll start, Richard, and you can chime in here at any time. So an Autumn Blaze, Brian, is actually a cross between silver and red maple. It's a hybrid. And so it should be green all year and then red in the fall. And if half of that came off, where that half came off usually is a weak union where there's two stems that come up and they split. The concern, if stuff is coming back and it looks okay, you could leave it. But the thing I would look for is if there was a big wound where that split, that often does not seal very well, and it can decay. And over time, that tree is going to become weaker and weaker. Even though it may sprout and look good, if that joint where that broke off is weak or has the potential for decay, and there's nothing you can use to seal it or anything, and if it broke off oddly and it's not a clean area, it's probably not going to seal very well. So if it's that way, I would actually start looking at, can I plant another tree close by, replace it, and then eventually take that down. But if it looks like it's sealing shut and there's quite a bit of tree left, you could give it some time. But I would really look to see what that wound looks like.
All right.
Yeah, The Autumn Blaze maple is a very, very popular variety, has been for 10, 15, 20 years. The problem is it tends to have kind of a poor branching habit. And if you don't prune it properly, it tends to do this. And so I kind of agree with Mark. If the wound is large, I would consider planting another tree nearby if I could.
Okay.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call, Brian. Next up, we've got John in Des Moines. Hey, John.
Oh, good morning. I may have a solution for that fellow that forgot to water his tree.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay, think like a rabbit. What do rabbits do? They girdle trees, right? Go up about 1 or 2 inches from the bottom of the tree and take a sharp knife and slice off the outer bark of the tree all the way around. And hopefully that would draw water back into the tree, and it would keep the guy from having to take the whole thing down and recutting it.
All right. Well, Mark,
does that sound reasonable?
Mark looks skeptical.
Well, I think that's a good idea, but again, the challenge of the cut, you're not going to be able to get a straight cut where you're going to get those vessels to be able to take the water. You're going to slice them open, but you're not going to cut it in a way that you're going to have a clean cut that those can come all the way, that water can get up through there. Because they always talk about some people will kind of block off the base, and that tends to disrupt that water movement too. But I think it's a good idea to try, but I think there's still going to be some challenges.
Well, and it's pretty early in the season, so if you want that tree to last, you might just need to take all those decorations off. John, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Mark Vitosh, DNR District Forester, and Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Geron are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh and Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Geron. They are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've got a few emails to get through here. Here's Susan in Jewell. She says, I have a 6-year-old sugar maple tree that has a narrow vertical crack going up about 3.5 feet. It's about 3/4 of an inch wide. Should I wrap the tree for the winter or do anything special in the summer? The sap would come out of it. Mark, what do you think?
It doesn't sound good. It depends on what side. If it's on the south facing, it could be something that they call sun scald. There could have been some damage there. If it's still a smooth bark tree, I would definitely wrap it. But I think I would try to send a picture to Extension or to a local forester or somebody or an arborist this summer to really take a look to see if we also get what we call frost cracking sometimes. And the thing to look for would be this spring to look to see if there's callus tissue along that vertical opening to see if the callus tissue is starting to try to seal that wound. If it is, it could have been a frost crack early on or something. But if it's not, then I think I'd try to get someone to take a closer look to see what the structural integrity of that plant. But I think wrapping it now, if it's still smooth bark, would hopefully alleviate any more sun scald or any kind of damage that way.
It's a young tree.
I know. That's what worries me. That's why I think, but if it's been in the ground for just 1 or 2 years, it still could get frost cracking if it was growing fast. But it bothers me a little bit that it's vertically cracked. So if it's actually, you can actually see through it, I would get somebody to take a closer look at it.
Well, and at this point, given how young it is that, would you consider just planting one nearby? And
well, again, I would get somebody like even the nursery or somebody that can look to really see what it is. Because I've seen some things that, again, if it starts to seal, a lot of times you can just let it go. It'll be fine. But if there's something else there, then, yeah, you may have to look at starting over.
All right. Here's a question from Tom. He says, in Dubuque County, the beavers have been destroying my trees for years. I noticed yesterday that in the past week they've taken down a row of 16-year-old swamp white oaks. Are these trees lost, or is it worth my while to put up some sort of fencing so they can regrow in the spring?
Well, he said 16-foot swamp white oak. So what he could do is he could actually cut those, if they kind of knobbed them down.
Actually, he said 16-year-old.
16-year-old, okay. So they're probably at least 16 foot or bigger. Even swamp oak grows pretty fast. So if they took them all the way down the stump, he could cut that stump flush and then set up a little cage, basically once the sprouts come up this spring, and try to work off and see if he can develop some stump growth and actually develop a new tree. There's a lot of energy in those root systems. So a tree like that may come back and grow 3 or 4 feet next year, and then he'd have to protect it. But a lot of times they will sprout back. So it's worth a try just to take the chainsaw, cut it flush, and then this spring when those new sprouts come up, try to cage them and protect them from the beavers coming back.
Now, if there are other trees around that he wants to protect, caging them is a really good idea.
It is. A lot of times chicken wire, a little heavier wire will work. You just got to make sure that it's tight enough to kind of keep them away, but loose enough so that tree can continue to expand.
Now, I realize you're not a wildlife specialist, but is there some merit to, do people talk about planting a bunch of fast-growing willows, like, you know, setting aside a part of the land for fast-growing willows near your water? Because beavers love those.
They do, but I've learned that actually for some reason they'll pick out the oaks sometimes too. I've had some plantings, what we call riparian buffers, where we've had ash and willow and stuff, and they'll go right down the row of oak for some reason too.
Right.
They know it's decay.
So protect the ones.
They know it's decay resistant, and so they know that it'll create a very nice home for them. So they're very intelligent.
All right.
I'm sure. But the other thing I would do from the wildlife side is I would talk to their local conservation officer or one of our wildlife biologists up there about management of the population too, to see if there's some alternatives to work with it that way also.
All right. I'm a big fan of beavers, so
you can work with them. Yes.
All right. Let's go to the phone. Zoe's on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Zoe.
Hi. I wanted to know, I really want to get a real Christmas tree, and my husband is a tree lover and says, you know, it'd be better to maybe get a fake tree. Do you know anything about the ecological impact?
I do. The thing to remember is a Christmas tree is a renewable resource, and most Christmas tree farms, if they're an active Christmas tree farm, are going to replant every year, and usually for every tree that's removed, they're planting at least one and possibly two. That Christmas tree is also recyclable. But the thing to think about is these plantations, that if they weren't growing Christmas trees, there would be no trees there at all. So they wouldn't be providing all those benefits and stuff. And most of our artificial trees are petroleum products. And I know it takes petroleum to mow and those kind of things. But the other thing is with our natural Christmas trees, they're great habitat for all kinds of critters, songbirds. They're also producing oxygen. They're removing carbon. So there's a lot of ecological benefits that tie to that. And again, they're recyclable. There's great programs throughout the U.S. that have developed over the years for folks to be able to recycle those Christmas trees so that wood and that material gets reused.
Well, and I'll ask you, I know we talk about this pretty much every year, a lot of people who are tree lovers and want that natural tree in their house will attempt to buy a tree at a nursery to plant.
Right.
And that's a pretty specific skill set you have to bring to that. So what,
right,
if that's an option they want to pursue, how would you do it?
Well, if a person wants to do that, I would actually not do it this year. And actually this year, actually so far, is actually kind of setting up okay. But I would think about it next year. And what you actually want to do is find a place where you could purchase a tree like that. And then really, you're only going to keep that tree in the house probably for 2 weeks, a week and a half to 2 weeks, just because of the heat and stuff like that. But you would actually want to pre-dig your hole in the fall when the ground was still viable before it froze and stuff. And then you'd want to cover it up with some straw and some stuff so that that ground doesn't freeze. Then you get your tree, you put it in, you decorate it for about 2 weeks, and then you go out and you plant that tree. So you really have to do a lot ahead planning to be able to do that. It is a feasible thing, but there's a lot of work to do that. there's a few growers out there that do provide those opportunities, but that's something you'd really want to research probably in the summer, where you might be able to locate a tree like that that you could use, or a local nursery, and then really plan ahead to do it. It's not something I would probably try now, but I think for next year, you could plan ahead and do it that way.
All right. And speaking of tree lovers, you also sent me an idea for a gift idea for the tree lovers in your life this year. If you go to nursery.iowadnr.gov.
I did. There's our state forest nursery has been able to get some of the rules changed, and we can sell trees now for basically any purpose. We have all kinds of conservation seedlings, but even for a small acreage or your backyard, there's shrubs and trees available for wildlife habitat. But you can go to our iowadnr.gov site, and you said, I think you have the link, but you can buy a certificate basically and order some trees. We even have one thing called a songbird packet, which is about, I think, 16 or 20 plants. It's a mixture of shrubs and trees. If people want to encourage songbirds in their backyard, what a great gift idea for your loved one or friend that may be interested in trees. But just contact the state nursery. You can order those ahead of time and then get them shipped this coming spring.
All right, and I just tweeted that link out on at Charity Nebby, so you can find out more about that. But Zoe, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. I do want to ask about another holiday plant, Richard. We see those tiny, adorable little Christmas trees in stores this time of year, the Norfolk pine. Any advice on buying those?
Well, they don't have to be tiny. They can be pretty big. The basic thing on those would be make sure it has bright light, and again, away from any heat source or draft. Water the plant basically when the soil surface becomes dry to the touch. Fertilize in spring and summer a little bit. But make sure it has plenty of light, because if you put it in a dark corner, eventually those branches will kind of droop and it won't look quite right. Also kind of turn the pot periodically just so that it stays nice and upright and straight. But very easy to maintain if you have a good location, and give it good, consistent care.
Well, and this is a plant, we were talking about the succulents earlier, that you don't want to overwater. Norfolk pine can dry out really fast, right?
It can, right.
So, I'm speaking from experience.
Yeah, right, it can. And if it gets extremely dry, what tends to happen is it tends to lose the bottom branches, where they will turn kind of a grayish green, and then eventually brown and dry up. And when they do that, then you've lost those branches permanently, and it really doesn't look that great. So make sure it doesn't get extremely dry.
They're slow growing, but remember, they do grow too. And over time, long term, think about space and stuff
right.
like that, because it's funny to see them stuffed somewhere where they're trying to find room to grow. But yeah. They will get pretty good size, and they could be one of those long-term plants if you take care of them.
Right.
And I had one that I loved for years until my cats did it in.
Oh, no.
And if you don't turn the pot, it just stays in that same spot. Over time, it will lean quite a bit and just doesn't look quite right when it does that. So.
All right. So good care. Turn it.
Right.
Repot if you need to.
If you need
plenty
to.
Plenty of water.
Good space.
All right. Tony is on the line in Winterset. Hi, Tony.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I was asking, it's not a holiday tree question, it's a question about a walnut tree. About a year ago, this walnut tree took a pretty severe lightning strike. It's a very old tree, it's probably 3.5 feet at the base, and the branch that got struck is about a 2-inch diameter. I'm wondering what the possibilities of that tree surviving. It doesn't look very healthy right now. It did bloom out and produce walnuts this year, but I'm just wondering about the following year. Its canopy is over a couple of outbuildings.
Tony, I would say typically, usually within 1 to 3 years, you kind of know what's going to happen. So I would wait till next spring, see what happens. And if it looks like it's pretty good, then I think your chances are a lot better. The thing with lightning strikes is it basically depends on how hot they are and how much moisture was in the tree at the time and how deep it got. And I've seen just...
A follow-up question would be, if I remove that 2-foot diameter trunk that got struck, would that would that increase its chances or not make any difference?
It won't make a difference because whatever's going to die or whatever was damaged, depending on how hot it got and how much it went through the tree, that damage is done. And how quickly it shows up, usually, like I said, can be a year to 3 years before they kind of die back. So if that particular branch is having problems and there's still, 60%, 70% of the tree left and the structure is okay, you may be able to take that one portion off. But by taking that, if it's, that's not going to influence how well the tree is going to survive.
Okay.
It's going to tell you, though, probably in the first couple years, though, here.
Yeah, the main base of the tree is losing its bark it went from the top of the branch clear to the ground, and it's losing a lot of bark off that side of the tree.
But the other thing, kind of back when I was talking about the crack earlier, so like if next spring and next summer where that crack is, and let's say, or that area where the bark is lost, and it ends up being just a few inches, and you start to see callus tissue from the edges start to come, that's all going to be good signs. What I would be more concerned about is looking at that tree structurally, just if there were cracks that formed or anything that from the lightning strike, sometimes they get deep enough that they can cause cracking, then I would be concerned about the structure.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks a lot for your call, Tony. Angela and Rolf says, I have a swamp maple tree my son got for Arbor Day two springs ago. We planted it in our front yard, but over the last winter, it did not produce leaves. I thought it died over the winter. When I was going to dig it up in June, then I discovered the one branch started growing leaves, but the trunk stem did not. Is this tree viable?
It does not sound good at all, but because it was a gift, her son brought it home, what I would do is wait till next spring, cut whatever's dead off, and if it's just one little branch and it's not growing upwards and it's not really part of the stem, it's probably time to call it.
All right.
But I would give it another year. I would protect it with a little cage or something from rabbits and stuff this winter, let it see if it leaves out, and then cut everything that's dead and just see what structure's left. If there's a stem with a viable branch coming that could actually be a stem, they could still work with it.
All right. Maybe go to the State Forest Nursery and get a couple more seedlings.
Get some
as well,
replacements,
right?
Yes.
All right. Kent is on the line in Ames. Hi, Kent.
Hi.
Hi. You've got a story to share. What is it?
Yeah, it's just a little. So you were talking about how the Christmas cactuses are passed on. So we inherited a Christmas cactus that had been many generations, mainly because nobody wanted the responsibility of keeping it going. And it's huge. It's probably about 3 feet in diameter now. And this fall, we decided, again, we needed to repot it. And we move it in and out of the house a lot. It's a two-person job, but we like to get it in the sun and bring it back in. And so this fall, I set it out, and right during a couple big rains and forgot to bring it in, and the holes were plugged in the bottom of a pot, and it was swamped for almost a week. And I thought, oh, great, it was a disaster, and I was the one that, this 100-year-old Christmas cactus, we were going to be the one that ended it. And we had taken cuttings, but I ran it to Earl May, just in a swampy mess, and they worked a miracle on it and repotted it in a much bigger pot again, and got all of the mucky soil off of it, put it in a succulent blend, they told me, and repotted it, and it's absolutely thriving again.
Oh, that's great. So you took it to the plant ER. Kent, thank you so much for your call. We are out of time for today. Richard Duran, thank you.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Duran. Mark Vitosh, thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
DNR District Forester Mark Vitosh. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.